Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A little later in the program, we'll be talking with a female veteran of the war in Iraq about the difficulties that is that she faced returning to civilian life. She says no one trains for reentry. One of her biggest battles, though, may have been a sexual harassment case before deployment. But first, how science has come to help veterans prevent and treat both invisible and physical wounds. We've come a long way since showing a real lack of understanding of the psychological and related problems faced by returning Vietnam veterans. Science has given us a better understanding of what many veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan are suffering with. With me in studio to talk about the science of preventing and treating what are called war's signature injuries are Rumi Cato Price, professor of psychiatry at Washington University School of Medicine and interim director of health services research and development for the Veterans Administration's St. Louis Healthcare System Research Service, Colonel Gary Gilmore, state chaplain for the Missouri National Guard in Jefferson City, and Sergeant First Class Laura Finn, non-commissioned officer in charge of the Missouri National Guard Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program. She's also from Jefferson City. Thank you all so much for coming in. It's nice to see you.
Thanks.
And thanks to our military people for driving all the way from Jefferson City today. That was nice of you to do that for us. Professor Price, let me begin with you. What are war's signature injuries?
Those are the wars that are very well known during the era. For example, in Vietnam, it would have been the Vietnam syndrome, or in the World War II, shell shock. Those are the signature injuries. Of course, there are casualties, which is death, or wounded. So that's those are the higher level of war's casualties. But then there are psychological or invisible wounds that became clearer as the science progressed.
What have we learned? What are the kinds of things that we've learned between Vietnam and the current era?
As you know, the word post-traumatic stress disorder did not exist until 1980. Before that was called, as I said, the Vietnam Syndrome. So in 1980, DSM-3, the psychiatrist Bible, came up with this term, and that was the beginning of a large-scale studies of a post-traumatic stress disorder. And by now, we have a very well established evidence-based treatments for PTSD. So that took three decades. And now in the new wars, what we have learned the most are the details of traumatic brain injuries, how the brain's damaged, what we can do about it. So those are the two signature injuries that we see today.
Isn't it true that after World War I and World War II, and to a certain degree after Vietnam, we'd hear about these problems that veterans were having, and we simply would say, get over it, or you will get over it.
Up to Vietnam, and even after that, that was true. And even now, military thinks that way. But on the other hand, the time has changed so that the military cannot afford losing their soldiers. So that is a big change that as I see it over the 3 and 4 decades. So there has been massive public health campaigns to disseminate the symptoms of PTSDs, symptoms of traumatic brain injuries, a lot of information. And that's a very different kind of attitude in the military. Of course, Veterans Administration has long been known to take care of those people who came back wounded, broken, and that has continued many decades.
Although the Veterans Administration, I have to say, has taken some heat recently for not being as aggressive, perhaps, in dealing with these things or completely up to standards in dealing with some of these things. Would you agree with that?
Yes and no. And the yes part, yes, we have seen some issues, but also the Veterans Administration has been trying very hard to accommodate the influx of veterans coming in. The Veterans Administration is not designed to take care of influx of veterans coming in compared to military. Military's job is send the soldiers out there, and they have a rapid mechanism of deployment. The Veterans Administration does not have a rapid mechanism of reintegration. So I think that's where we're seeing the gap between the VA and the military operation.
Let me turn to Sergeant Finn here for a moment. You're dealing with the reintegration process, right? What are you seeing, and what's coming into play and from your perspective?
As far as the reintegration program for the soldiers and their family? For the most part, overall, it's fairly seamless. But we do have our difficulties. I mean, there's times where there's injuries or there's the hidden casualties that she's referring to that do come into play that we do track with our services and our care team. And we also do follow-up care for all those things that are identified.
What is the follow-up process?
Counseling, any kind of guidance or whatever kind of needs they might need, financial needs, counseling, family care, different types of programs that are available to them.
Is this the exception to the rule, or is this very commonplace, having to deal with people that need the kind of counseling we're talking about?
Well, it is getting to be fairly common, but what you have to realize is the human dynamic. Everybody's made up differently, and we are affected by everything in our own way.
Yeah. Colonel, let me turn to you. You deal with it on a different level, obviously. What are you seeing, and what are the kinds of things that you're hearing?
Well, I'd just like to affirm what's already been said. Dr. Price is really accurate about the military mission focus and then the long-term care piece that happens after that. I think as we work together in the Yellow Ribbon Forum, we find that deployment does change a person just by the mere fact that you go. And so there's a baseline of issues that touches every home, every family, every soldier, every extended family. And then on top of that, there's kind of what happens to you while you're over there. There are some folks who are very isolated. Others are out on the front lines doing very dangerous things that we expect of them, and they're certainly heroes for doing. So that when everybody comes back home, it's kind of a mixed bag of reintegration or reunion. Reunion is always wonderful, that moment when you hug your loved one again. But reintegration, fitting back in, can have a lot of challenges. And so what we've had to do, depending on, was it a traumatic brain injury? Was there a condition that was serious enough to merit a diagnosis medically of PTSD? Then what are the other pieces of your life and how you fit back in at work and how your kids have changed while you're gone? Those things.
In the second segment of our program today, we're going to be talking about some of those difficulties. They don't all relate necessarily to traumatic brain injury or PTSD. It's simply a question of readjusting.
Yes.
It's a double whammy, is it? There's an adjustment that has to be made going into a war zone and an adjustment that has to be made coming back.
Very much. And we say that reunion is an event, but reintegration is a process, that it does take time. And I'm sure civilians looking at active duty or National Guard coming home, you say, well, you know, just pick up where you were. That isn't always that easy. The family has gone on in different ways. Your job has changed in different ways. The maturity level of your children, they've now grown. And people want to come and talk to you, and yet sometimes not real sure where to put that just yet.
So. Dr. Price, the research that you've been doing has dealt primarily with the Missouri National Guard. Is that correct?
Yes, for the current period. Before that was Vietnam veterans. That was a national population.
Mm. I'm going to point out now that the Academy of Sciences of St. Louis is presenting, that is, When Soldiers Come Home, The Science of War Injuries from Vietnam to Afghanistan, tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock at the Lee Auditorium at the Missouri History Museum. You're going to be a part of that.
Correct.
I have seen the PowerPoint presentation that you've been working on with regard to this, and a couple of things struck me. One is the suicide situation, which, correct, of course, is just awful to see the kinds of numbers that you're talking about. But I was really surprised to see how many of these veterans, within a year or so after they come back, are involved in automobile accidents. What's going on?
Well, we don't have the answer, the true answer, but the part of that is the whole package of reintegration. Imagine yourself, you're sent to middle of nowhere in Africa and being told to do X, Y, and Z. You come home, and aren't you going to be a little bit disoriented and couldn't figure out who am I dealing with, my wife, my kids, and I would be in that situation. Oh, well, I don't know where I left my keys. So there's a lot of disorientation, so to speak, when you come back. Now, soldiers are trained to adjust that very quickly. Nonetheless, when you think about the war zone in Afghanistan or Iraq and the very peaceful, pastoral Missouri rural area, it's a very different thing. And I came from Asia. And the first 5 years or so, it was very difficult to really just understand the culture, even though I could speak English pretty well, and then I was admitted to university. So I can relate to them. I have never had war experience per se, but it's the changing of the whole train and the life patterns. So part of that, I think, is just the disorganization in one's cognitive map. That creates a situation, and if you add additional stressors, losing a girlfriend, losing boyfriend, and the divorce or separation, and the kids acting, those would be a trigger. And the third, military personnel knows how to use guns. So the guns are accessible. So those three things added, it's very easy to getting from being frustrated, disoriented, to taking their own lives.
So the two are associated to some degree. It's just a question of degree, I suppose. The person who takes the ultimate step of taking his or her own life, that may manifest itself in other people in the kind of disorientation behind the wheel of a car. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So it could have been an accident or suicide. However, I should say that in case of suicide among military personnel, their traumatic experience explains a lot. Even though the actual cause of accident, cause of death, maybe suicide and one car accident or those things, I think the experience of more trauma impacts you a lot. Mm-hmm.
I have to take a break, but very quickly I'll ask of both the sergeant and the colonel, were you deployed?
Yes, sir.
To which theater?
I was at Kosovo.
At Kosovo. And colonel?
Yes, sir. I was in Baghdad. 2007 and 2008.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about that experience and your own reentry situation when we come back. We'll do that in just a second. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the difficulties that our veterans are having when they come home, whether it's the result of psychological issues or dramatic and traumatic injuries that they suffer while they're in theater. Back in just a minute, our guests are Rumi Cato Price, Interim Director of Health Services Research and Development for the Veterans Administration, St. Louis Healthcare System, Colonel Gary Gilmore, State Chaplain of the Missouri National Guard, and Sergeant First Class Laura Finn, NCO in charge of the Missouri National Guard Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program. We'll continue in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation concerning the reentry of veterans coming back primarily from war zones, Afghanistan and Iraq. We're all familiar with some of the stories we've been hearing about problems veterans face, but we have a couple of them here in studio. And Sergeant Finn, let me start with you. It's been a while since you got back from Kosovo, I'm sure. What sort of difficulties, if any, did you have when you came back?
Some of the things that you don't realize that are going to affect you is how much life has changed since you've been away. People will be talking and carrying on conversations about things that you don't even have any knowledge of. Your children and their dynamic has changed, and the fact that, you know, when you used to be the one that they would come to with their fears or their problems, they don't come to you anymore because now daddy's taking that place. And some of the things that we see is just how dramatic it is for us to try and come back and fit into what we would normally consider normal society, when it's totally different for us now.
How long did it take for you to get beyond that?
Depending on what all you're dealing with, I mean, it takes a full year to feel comfortable and readjust. They call it the honeymoon phase, where the first, 60 to 90 days, everything's going great and you're happy and people are taking you out to dinner and all these things. And then after that, reality starts to set in and the family's not coming over as much and all these things. And so it takes a long time to readjust and be able to realize that you don't have to sleep with your weapon. You don't have to do all the things that, we as soldiers don't deal with in our normal day life as civilians. And being that dual status is a very difficult role sometimes to play.
It's hard for someone who's never been through it to understand the kinds of feelings that you're describing here, particularly with regard to feeling you should be close to your weapon at all times. Mm-hmm. Colonel, how about you? You more recently returned.
Yeah, we went with our engineer brigade, and we were involved in the time of the surge. We were going to go anyway. We were not a surging unit, but we were involved in the Solder City, bringing down the violence there. And we also had folks doing route clearance. So there is this hyper arousal of just knowing that you're kind of at risk at all times. And instead of a period where that goes away, it becomes just a part of your life. And so when our soldiers go to chow with the weapon in hand or to the restroom, they have to carry their weapon or someone is monitoring that at all times, it just creates a very different level of anxiety, which then our bodies react to, and we can get to a point of hyperarousal or this constant alertness. It's very wonderful in a war zone. It's very different when you're back home, and your body doesn't just get off the airplane and have that totally all go away.
How long did it take for you before you felt like you had reintegrated completely?
That year is a pretty good timeline. I think we find in our Yellow Ribbon program, you ask some of the things going on. One of the most consistent things that our soldiers deal with coming home is the hyperarousal and the difficulty sleeping at night. And then that can set in motion second and third order of effects, where if you don't sleep well, you don't feel well. You may not work well, or you're irritable, or these other symptoms that the family members say, you're different too. Then there's this process of readjustment. But yes, I can remember going to church for the first time, and I felt a little insecure because there weren't a bunch of weapons underneath everybody's chair. So it's kind of a unique dynamic that you find yourself in.
Well, it certainly seems to be. And Professor Price, these are things that you've heard many times in your research, obviously.
Yes.
So where is the research going to take us?
With respect to reintegration, public health approach, health promotion, compared to Vietnam veterans, we found that the level of PTSD is slightly higher in general. Alcohol use is lower, and the prescription drug use is higher. So those are the areas that if they have not gotten really sick, public health approach, health promotion, and going to see a counselor, health services providers, those are the steps that they can take. And the Yellow Ribbon program actually promote soldiers to seek help.
Yeah. Maybe, Sergeant, you can just give us a quick thumbnail sketch of the Yellow Ribbon program, exactly how that works.
The Yellow Ribbon program is designed to help deploying soldiers, either whether they're going to war or coming home from war. And the overall program is to establish a baseline for family members as well as service members when they return to have a resource outreach program to where all the resources are available in one general location, which is the Patriot Center in Jefferson City, Missouri. And that's how we can get everybody to have that one phone number to call in for help no matter what their needs or any kind of assistance they may need.
Well, that's something I can see as perhaps a bit of a problem, and that is that the person who needs the help has to do the reaching out. Is that correct, pretty much?
Yes, because of the confidentiality issue. Yeah. For example, in our research, we can ask the National Guard to outreach to come to talk to us, or we go to Yellow Ribbon and solicit their participation. But we can't just grab somebody and tell me what what problems you have. We can't do that, right?
That's what I see that might be an issue, and that mm-hmm. is someone who does have problems, traumatic brain injury, PTSD, whatever emotional, psychological problems are there. But they have to do the reaching out. If they don't do it, they might not be inclined to. You don't get them.
To a point, we certainly need that awareness of a soldier to say things are different, and it's not just this normal. We've got to get to a new normal, and I'm either having trouble getting there or the social mirror is talking to me. This is where we're training our soldiers who went together. This is why we do the group experience. You know your battle buddy better than anybody else. Is this normal for him? And if it's not, the responsible thing to do to take care of your soldier and your unit is to raise your hand and say, we have resources available. Let's connect you to those.
We also have we track the deployments, and we make sure that we know what happened to the service members while they're deployed, if there's any losses or any concerns or any excessive battle levels, you know. And so we track that and we identify it, and we have different approaches that we do whenever they come home. And most of the staff has been trained to identify what we would refer to as red flags.
One of the things, though, that I have read is the fact that they ask the returning military people to report if they have any problems, think that they have some problems. And they're not doing it because it creates various problems. It delays their mustering out, for instance.
Right. There are institutional pressures when you come back through your demobilization station. You've been gone. You want to see your kids. They're just around the corner. There's a ceremony. The governor will come. The adjutant general is there. You really have an institutional pressure to say, just sign this and go on. That is truly a mistake to do, and in time, that will surface. But there's a reason why Yellow Ribbon is 30 days out, 60 days out, and then ongoing catchment devices through the ongoing course of the year as we reintegrate back into our normal routines. Mm-hmm. The point I'd really just love to stress is that whether we did the paperwork perfectly or not, if somebody is struggling, talk to your friend. And your friend is your friend is going to help you get to the resources that are available.
We talk about the invisible wounds. Let's take a moment, and time is beginning to get away, about those that are quite visible. Men and women come back with lost arms and legs and mm-hmm. limbs. They come back after perhaps being exposed to sexual abuse. Does your research take you there? I mean, how do you deal with that when they come back?
Sexual abuse has not been my area of expertise, but military has a number of calls for proposal. So we are considering to apply for research funds to do that. This is a very highly sensitive area, and we really need a participation by the members in the military unit to get the really best out of what we can do as a researcher. I personally think the higher up effort, policy change, those things are more important at this stage than what we can uncover, because we know sexual trauma is bad. We know how it happens in the military. So it's really the research can do quite a bit in terms of prevention, treatment. But beyond that, I think the policy changes is really needed.
And perhaps they are being affected now. Senators Gillibrand and McCaskill, I know, are working hard on that. Mm-hmm. So that's – but again, and very quickly, if you would – those who are coming back with lost limbs, I mean, they face psychological issues as well, do they not? How do we deal with them?
I don't know enough about their psychological states, to be honest with you, because we deal with people who are pretty much normal in that sense, physically mm-hmm. at least. What I can say is, I don't know if you've seen the picture in the PowerPoint, the really smiling man when he got the prosthetic. There's something called the post-traumatic stress growth, and I think that's an area that we have not really explored in research. And those people who lost limbs, they actually, the Lieutenant Dan's in Forrest Gump. I mean, he went through the period of alcoholism and things like that, but he came out of it. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to look at both positive sides and the negative sides of war experience.
We have a long way to go, obviously, but at least we're moving in the right direction. I'm going to ask each of you, as we say goodbye, to just, is there a final thought, Sergeant, you'd like to leave us with regard to all of this?
If there's any service members out there that do need assistance, please don't hesitate to call our office.
All right. We'll get some information on how they can do that on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Dr. Price, final thought?
Yes. In this period, I think the military is paying much more attention to family system and a support system that was absent in Vietnam, and I think the military should be praised for that.
And Colonel, final thought?
Good. Well, I would say that in this area, we're using resilience skills as a preventative measure. And then suicide has been certainly a focus, and sexual assault is emerging. But resilience, being able to rise above these difficult circumstances and bounce back from life's troubles.
Let me just point out once again that the Academy of Science of St. Louis presents When Soldiers Come Home, The Science of War Injuries from Vietnam to Afghanistan, tomorrow evening at 7 at the Lee Auditorium at the Missouri History Museum. Our guest, Rumi Price, Professor Dr. Rumi Price, will be there. I want to thank you for being with us, Professor, and Sergeant Finn, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And Colonel Gilmore, thank you so much. When we come back, we'll talk with a female veteran who will tell her story about returning to civilian life. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.